Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. He's at home in Connecticut. I'm in a hotel room in New York City. If you're watching us on YouTube, please go ahead and smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And if you haven't yet, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please knock that out while you're here. Let's get into it. Deadleg, you were inside Madison Square Garden Tuesday night for the Jimmy V, Illinois over Texas. In overtime, Duke over Iowa. Let's take those games in the order that they were played. As you and Tom Fornelli and all Illinois fans know, I spent the entire offseason warning people against underrating Illinois. I just said, be careful. You don't want to underrate the Illini. Some listened, some did not. Either way, I was reminded of this Tuesday night when Illinois upset Texas 85-78 in OT. So now Illinois 7-2, got wins over Texas and UCLA. The losses are to Virginia and Maryland. You saw it with your own eyes up close. Did you learn more about Illinois or Texas on Tuesday night inside MSG?
You want to run that back for me? I mean, listen, I got in late, you know, working on 4.5 hours of sleep. What did you just say?
Say it again. You mean just start from the top?
I mean, not exactly. What did you just say that you said about Illinois in the preseason?
I spent the entire, not just the preseason. The preseason implies like October. I'm talking about since last April. The entire offseason, every time Illinois would come up, I would say, I just feel like people are underrating the Illini. You're not giving Brad Underwood enough credit. You're not acknowledging the impact that Terrence Shannon is going to make, not to mention Matthew Meyer. So, be skeptical of the Illini at your own risk, Ken Pomeroy and all AP voters. And now here we are. It's December 7th, and look who looks like a genius again. It's old GP.
Liar.
No. Don't. Stop. Everyone knows the truth. I'm surprised Fornelli's not in the live chat right now. I actually think Cover 3 is also we're going head to head with Cover 3 live on the YouTubes right now. So that might be why Fornelli can't be here. Because otherwise, I think he'd be knocking down your door here. Because Illinois, yes, nice win. And by the way, it didn't feel like, you know, sometimes when you watch a game in person versus how you watch it on television, they can sometimes give across two different kind of vibes in the arena. It certainly felt like Texas was headed for a sure and certain victory once it really took control in the second half there. I thought it was a good sign for Illinois. It got to halftime. Terrence Shannon Jr. didn't have any points, and they had the lead by 3. And I thought, well, you know, surely he should pick it up in the second half, and that should mean some good stuff for Illinois. But Texas went on a 16-2 run. And then really, and I did write an extensive takeaways off of this late on Tuesday night, Texas should have won the game, no doubt. No doubt about it. Texas should have won the game. It blew it. If you play that out again, final 5 minutes.
Oh,
10.
Wow. Now who's the Illinois hater?
I mean, it sounds like you're projecting, my man. Texas should have won the game. That's objective fact. Like, Beard knew it. The players knew it. You play that game out, 8 times out of 10, I think Texas winds up pulling it away. But they didn't do it. Tyrese Hunter missed a foul shot that he needed. Marcus Carr, I think, had a couple of possessions there where they weren't ideal. And then they got to overtime. Big Illinois contingent there at MSG. I don't think quite the size of the horde that traveled out to Vegas for those pair of games back in November there, but still a really good group there. And then Shannon went off. So to me, the game on Tuesday, I wrote that I'm not really concerned at all about Texas. What Texas did was it spoiled not just a chance to go undefeated in non-conference, but if you look at the schedule, next up is Pine Bluff, then Rice, Stanford, Louisiana, Texas A&M, Commerce. Like, Texas should have been undefeated going into its Big 12 opener on New Year's Eve at Oklahoma. Instead, it'll be 11-1. Losses happen, whatever. They gave it away, to me, it was way, way more about Illinois. And Brad Underwood afterward, I love the quote. He kind of, in his opening statement at the press conference, was saying, it surprises every time. I don't know where it's coming, who's going to be doing it, how this is going to happen. But they've been able to beat two top 10 KenPom teams, UCLA back on November 18th, and then here with Texas. And they responded well after, losing by 5 against Maryland on the road. Underwood told me, I did not realize this was the case, but in the Friday loss at Maryland, the Terps apparently only made 4 baskets over about a 16-minute period in that game, and Illinois only lost by 5 on the road in that game. He said, we played dumb. We just played dumb. And he played Coleman Hawkins 38 minutes in that game. He said, I don't want to play him that much in a game for the rest of the season. And the way that he was able to use his lineup and figure out other things, that was the other big takeaway for me. Is Underwood admitting, and I love when coaches can, not be so prideful as to not share this kind of stuff with the press. He said, some of the stuff we're guessing based off of how we're doing in practice. I don't really know what lineup I'm going to be going with when it really matters here. Doesn't know if it's how much playing time, say Jaden Epps is going to get off the bench. And he obviously was the reason the game even got to overtime for Illinois there. He sat Shannon for a serious stretch down the stretch in the second half. How many, Shannon wasn't having a good night until overtime, but how many coaches would really be willing to sit their best player against a top 2 team in a neutral environment? That's a big spot for Illinois there. So Underwood he's still figuring it out, which I find to be pretty interesting, but they've got a good young group. And then Shannon's going to be better on the whole most nights than he was for the first 40 minutes here. Really nice win for Illinois. And that'll be worth a seed. That'll be worth a seed bump when we get to
it. It's a December 7th seed bump.
No question, man. That's going to be a quad 1 win over Texas. Those teams could be fighting for similar seeds in general. So good stuff. Liked what I saw the Illini there and the way they got the win. Underwood, he's getting there, but he still is not quite sure. All the concoctions that are going into to making this team to be a Big Ten contender. But I'm not off that opinion either, GP. I picked them in the preseason to win the Big Ten. Obviously, Purdue's been the best team so far in that league performance-wise, but Illinois should have something to say about it, and that was a nice little rally inside the Garden.
To your point about Texas should have won the game, the Longhorns were up double digits with less than 8 to play in regulation. And then Illinois closes on a 22-12 run featuring 0 buckets from Terrence Shannon. He had 0 at the half, 4 in the second half, none in that 22-12 run that Illinois used to force the extra period. And then he went wild. He had 12 of the 17 Illinois points in overtime, helped them pull away and deal Texas its first loss of the season. So I've moved Illinois up to number 5 in the top 25-1. Better late than never. Got Texas now at number 6. Houston is my new number 1, but it's hilarious. I'm sure you saw the tweet last night because I quote tweeted your tweet from the Garden, and tongue firmly in cheek. Tongue firmly in cheek. Hey, I've been trying to tell people all off season about Illinois because I think most people know. I had Illinois outside of the top 25-1 in the preseason. I had Illinois 6th in the Big Ten preseason projections, and that got the attention of Illinois fans, most famously our friend and colleague Tom Fornelli, who has continuously riled up the fan base basically every time Illinois wins or every time I rank anything. And so I was just having a little fun with that. It never ceases to amaze me, although it certainly should at this point, how many people like are just angry about this stuff in real life. Like I tweeted this last night and I got a few responses. This one guy at KC Smitty 27.
Shout out to Smith.
He tweeted at me. He said, "Gary, we don't want you on our train. Please stay off, hater."
And he's that's right. You missed your chance. Your stop has long since passed.
I hope KC Smitty 27 is listening right now. I am on your train. In fact, I'm going to drive your train. I'm now the driver of the Illinois train.
Is this a hostage takeover situation now?
Yes. Okay. I didn't want to do this. All right. But now you're telling me I can't. And I don't like to be told what I can and cannot do. Not at this age. So now I feel like I've got to not only get on your train, KC Smitty 27, I'm going to drive your train. Choo, choo. That's me driving a train. That's me driving the Illinois train right now. Choo, choo.
You might be on the wrong train, my man, because that sounds like a good old steam engine. And I'm just telling you, and Illinois fans know, this thing is a bullet train, baby. Speeding down the tracks. Love it. So
I don't know how to impersonate a bullet train. I only know how to impersonate peacocks, the beginning of Omaha, and like a conventional train.
Okay.
Woo, woo. That's me driving the Illinois train. I got another tweet from a guy. This one's from Kilton Ramen, I guess. I don't know. It says, he replied to me. He said, "Says the clown that always hates on the Illini." And I was thinking about this, like, what do I care about as much as these people care about Illinois basketball? And the only thing I can come up with is probably the Mets, right? Shouts to Justin Verlander, by the way. And I asked myself, I said, have I ever considered like tweeting Matt Snyder about his MLB power rankings?
Actually, you know what? Please do.
I've never even thought about it. I mean, it's never even occurred to me to be.
Just drop a clown emoji on our colleague Snyder in the middle of July. Please do. Just unprompted. Why not?
Maybe I'm not being a proper fan. Like, I care deeply about the New York Mets, but I don't get mad at, like, actually angry or even bothered in the least about how somebody might rank the Mets in the middle of a season on a website. These people get genuinely mad and they draw all these conclusions from it. Like, I must hate Matthew Meyer, or which I do, by the way. Hey, I despise.
That's established on this podcast.
I mean, yes. Anybody that leaves Scott Drew, you're on my enemy list. All right. You're on my enemy list. So some
you
of it's true.
Matthew Meyer tied up and stuffed in a closet in the fifth train car at this point. He's on the train as well, but he, you know, against his will, he is being tucked away. So
that's me driving the Illinois train, whether KC Smitty 27 likes it or not.
Can someone please, if there's any person listening to this podcast that has Photoshop skills and can put Parrish in the driver's seat of a train, conductor hat and everything, maybe a little Illinois logo. I might be asking too much.
Now they looked good. Or at least they played well enough down the stretch to upset a Texas team that was playing outside of the state of Texas for the first time this season. But now, hey, I think this is probably true. All's well that ends well. I'm now driving the Illinois train and probably have Illinois ranked higher than anybody else in the world.
Where are they at?
5 in the top 25 and 1.
There you go. Wow. 7-2 team, losses to Virginia and Maryland, both reasonable. Wins over Texas and UCLA. Home win against Syracuse doesn't amount to much. Number 5. I don't know if Illinois is the 5th best team in the country right now, but I think they have the potential to possibly get there. Can you quickly go over your rationale? I know you got to put them ahead of Texas. I know that's part of it here. They beat Texas on a neutral, and even though it was Texas has one loss, you probably were saying, I can't justifiably have Texas ranked ahead of Illinois when Illinois just did this at this point in the season. So why that high?
I could have obviously kept them below Texas and just say it's the result of one game. If you insist I must have Illinois ahead of Texas, then you know, are you also insisting I've got to have Maryland ahead of Illinois? You know, because Maryland beat Illinois a few days ago. You know, like you can find yourself in some weird places if you start saying the result of this game means this team has to be ahead of this team, especially, you know, a month into the season. But with Illinois, listen, I really do think at this point you need to have the undefeated teams with big wins, or just the undefeated teams that were supposed to be great, you know, at the top of this thing. So Houston, Purdue, Virginia, UConn are all undefeated teams, and three of those have like significant wins, and Houston was always supposed to be this, and Houston's got an opportunity to get a significant win when the Cougars play this weekend against Alabama. After that, I really do think you could do the next 6, 7, 8 teams in pretty much any order, and the truth is I didn't want to drop Texas too far because I still think Texas is very good. Computer numbers are still really strong. They do have a blowout win of Gonzaga. So I said, okay, I'm gonna take Illinois on the backs of what is now two significant wins over Texas, UCLA. One of the losses is a loss to a team I've got ranked higher, undefeated Virginia. And the other one is a single digit loss on the road to a Maryland team that I also still have ranked, even though Maryland, and we'll get to this, lost on Tuesday night at Wisconsin. I've still got Maryland in my top 15. So there's I guess the simplest way to say it is that there's a million different ways to go after you get outside of the top four in this moment. And Illinois makes as much sense there as anybody else. And given that I decided last night before I went to sleep that I was going to start driving the Illinois train, I decided let's go all in on it. Put Illinois at 5, Texas at 6, and then everything else can fall in line behind that.
A couple more notes on this. Matthew Meyer had 21 points, season high. He did not miss a shot in the first half. He had 15 at the break, and Beard told me after, you know, if I had to boil it down, they won it because of Meyer in the first half and Shannon in overtime. You know, everything else kind of canceled itself out, so to speak. And yeah, I mean, if Meyer's going to be, now I'm not going to expect or ask him, and no one is, to drop 15 and a half with regularity and not miss a shot there, but quite clearly a major development for them on that end. And then Illinois' defense, you know, it had 12 block shots in this game. That's the most yet this season. But Illinois has had at least 7 swats in 3 consecutive games, and it's forcing at least 14 turnovers almost every game this season. So the defense has shown up with extreme consistency, and that will continue to be a calling card for Underwood's teams, which has been the case. You know, Illinois is trying to be a top to 10, 15 level kind of team for a third consecutive season. I think it will get there. I think it can get there. But when you consider having lost DeSumo 2 seasons ago and then don't have Trent Frazier and Kofi Coburn, like, it's a good job by Underwood. And if you're an Illinois fan, the reason why, if you're kind of wondering why, like, outside of just getting the win, what is it about my existence here that I'm just find myself satisfied with the direction of our program after we were waiting and waiting and waiting, you know, to get back to this kind of point? Well, here's the deal, man. Illinois has 8 wins all time against teams ranked 1 or 2 in the AP poll, but only 2 have ever come outside of Champaign. Both of those wins have come under Brad Underwood. The first one happened against Michigan in March of 21, and the second one happened on Tuesday night. Underwood is 12-10 at Illinois when playing top 10 opponents. So you're having success in high profile games more often than not. And that kind of success rate is going to breed a lot of positivity within a program and within a fan base there. Illinois, I do expect, as I predicted in the preseason, Big Ten champions, top 10 team, your guy right here. Okay. Don't forget that. I'll let GP drive the, I'll let him drive the little choo-choo. That's fine. Your bullet train captain right here. Don't forget that. They are pacing themselves toward that. And I think if they really have not really figured everything out right now, then that's a bit scary for the rest of the Big Ten, just because I would fully anticipate Illinois to be in the thick of the top of that conference race throughout the season.
Well, like the quote you tweeted last night where Brad said, hey, you know, right now we don't really know where it's coming from, you know, how we're going to do it, but like we're doing it. I'm paraphrasing, but some version of that. And you know, that's the thing. Like we have seen in this season already, like Terrence Shannon look for a game like the best player in the country. And then of course, Matthew Meyer has an incredible performance last night on Meyer. I think people have been saying that's who he is for like 2 years now. And he's just, you know, he has never been a consistently high level player, but he has shown flashes. He did it at Baylor and obviously last night. If you can ever get something consistent out of him, not what he did last night, but where you go, man, he's exactly the type of player and NBA prospect that we thought he was going to be when he helped Baylor win a national championship, then you've got something. He hasn't been that consistently this season, but perhaps what happened Tuesday night can be a launching point for him. I saw an interview with him. I want to say it was with Andy Katz, but it might have been with somebody else.
It was with Katz.
Yeah. But does anybody interview more people after games than Andy Katz?
Katz was my seatmate last night, man.
Are we sure there's not like seven Andy Katz?
He is everywhere. He's
like every time I watch a game and then I'm just scrolling through Twitter and it's like an Andy Katz just talking to somebody who just played in this game. I'm like,
just all over the place, an absolute maniac in the best way. So Andy Katz, by the way, informed me he's on a huge Prairie View A&M Indiana game this weekend or something. I don't know. But the man is relentless there. But yes, I believe what you were referring to is Mr. Katz's interview with Mr. Meyer on Tuesday night.
Do you think Andy even has a home at this point?
He does. He had to get on the train there with post haste to make sure that he caught the right train to get back home. But I believe he is at his home as we speak right now.
Yeah, I doubt it. Okay. He's getting ready to interview somebody in South Dakota. I'm certain. I'm certain he's at.
By the way, on that note, hey, I got to bring this up real quick. So I did a quick dinner with our buddy Jeff Borzello, and he did not listen to our Sunday episode. Wouldn't you know it? He's got a brother, and wouldn't you know it? His brother produced the Gonzaga Baylor game on Peacock, the one that you crapped all over.
I said it just didn't look the way
I informed him of that.
It just didn't look.
He didn't mind, but it was just funny. I was like, you got to be kidding me, because he brought it up for whatever reason. Because we were talking about the game, and I was like, you won't believe this, man, but you should have heard Parrish on the Sunday podcast just destroying this broadcast.
I did not destroy it, though. I just said that it didn't look, it looked off. It just looked a little off visually. You know what? It was probably my TV.
Okay.
It's probably my fault. It's probably my TV. You know what? I should probably upgrade TVs.
Okay. That's the issue. Yeah.
It's a brand new TV.
Maybe you'll get Pac-12 Network.
I'm a Pac-12 Network denier. I don't believe it exists. I know people say it does, but I don't think that's true. I think they're wrong. You know, I often roll my eyes at Kyrie Irving with all his nonsense, but like if Kyrie comes out as a Pac-12 Network denier, I'm with him. What if me and Kyrie Irving become Pac-12 Network deniers together?
You never want to start a sentence with "What if me and Kyrie Irving?"
That's a good point.
That's not how. You want to start a sentence like that.
That's a good point. I don't want anything to do with Kyrie Irving. Here's my point about Matthew Meyer. He was like doing the interview with Katz, and he was like, you know, to have this kind of game inside Madison Square Garden, like that's the dream. And you know, like that I now these things are just popping in my head and I can't remember where they came from. Was it you and Katz tweeting about best NBA place to watch a college basketball game?
Yes.
And you guys are exactly right.
I want to just read my feed from Tuesday night and like move along with the podcast along.
All this stuff is just coming to me. It is Madison Square Garden. That's an amazing place for college basketball, not just because of the building, but because of where the building is located in Midtown Manhattan. You know, you posted the picture since we're just going through your feed now. You got the Empire State Building in the background. I think I have that identical picture from a different Jimmy V or a different Champions Classic. So, you know, to have that type of performance in that building on that stage, you know, that's a lifelong memory. So though I can never forgive him for leaving Scott Drew and Huck. You know, I was happy to see him have that moment on that stage last night at his new home. And now we'll see how the rest of the season goes for Matthew Meyer in Illinois. But so far, so good. Again, fifth in the top 25 and one as of Wednesday morning. Let's move on to the nightcap. Duke beat Iowa Tuesday night. Second game of the Jimmy V. We're going to get into that next. But first, a word from our partners.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A reminder, if you want, you can now email the show, shouts2cbs@gmail.com. Shouts2cbs@gmail.com. We are loving the responses we've gotten, the emails, the correspondence, the questions. Continue sending them. You can send in a video if you'd like, 10 to 15 second video, ask a question, name, city, town, get out. We'll try and drop those in going forward on the show, on the YouTube channel. Continue to send us stuff. We love hearing from you. And thank you as always for subscribing.
So Duke beat Iowa Tuesday night at MSG. Final score, Duke 74, Iowa 62. That's a 12-point win. Chris Murray never really got going. Season low, 8 points on just 9 shots. First question for you, because you were there. How much of that was a result, the Chris Murray limitations, was a result of what Duke did to the All-American candidate as opposed to just an off night for the All-American candidate?
Fran McCaffrey was asked about this in the post game, and he did credit Duke's defense, but and even Shire said this as well. There were just a few that would normally fall that just didn't fall here. And McCaffrey also said that he thought that Chris was playing a pretty well balanced all around game, or at least he gave that kind of effort. No, he did not shoot well. That was obvious. But he just pointed out like he did get 7 rebounds, 3 assists, was good with the ball, but he didn't play well, man. I mean, he had 8 points. There's no way that John Shire and that staff realistically expected or could have thought that they would hold Murray like under 14, 13 points. They didn't even let him into double digits there. And Iowa was the third ranked team in offensive efficiency heading into the game. 62 points, season low in points and threes. Hawkeyes only made 3 triples. Just a big time showing by Duke on the defensive end. And we look up here. I've got a thought. I'm going to have a column later today that'll be on Jeremy Roach. His progress, I think, is a very good sign for Duke. But we look up right now. I mean, Duke's got one more game in non-con. It's going to win Maryland Eastern Shore. It's going to be 10-2, right? Overall, you know, 5-point loss on a neutral to Kansas. And then, yes, they got rocketed by Purdue in Portland. But Purdue has played as well as any team in the country to this point. So, you know, right now, like, you're good. Shire's doing a solid job right now. The offense isn't all the way there. They have, you know, they're highly lauded freshmen. You know, they're getting there. Like, you know, Whitehead and Lively.
Are they? Some of them are. I'm not sure.
I mean, like, you know, they're 10-2 in spite of this. I actually think they, all things considered, you know, if we're gonna make an analogy to playing around a golf here. You know, Duke's about they're through seven holes and they're one over par. Like they're fine. They're not playing poorly on the hole. And Shire's done a pretty good job, all things considered. And you know, Mark Mitchell continues to play better. Roach and Filipowski have been reliable. You know, and Shire even said he gave Whitehead credit because he basically said if this guy wanted to sit out the entire non-conference to make sure he was as healthy as could possibly be, and then, you know, come along mid to late December, he could have done that. We would have understood, but he was determined to get back as quickly as possible to be a part of our team for a very critical part of the non-con slate with PK85 and then Ohio State and then here with Iowa. And it just hasn't happened yet. But overall, like, yeah, Duke's doing just fine. No, it's not a top 10 team. But it could have understandably not been this. Like, it could have just dropped a second game in Portland, or maybe it doesn't show up against Iowa and it loses. But that's not what's happened. Duke right now is 9-2. It's going to be 10-2. It's a top 15 team in the country, and I would say it has not yet gotten out of third gear, and I think that it eventually will. So signs of progress, I think, are pretty good at this point.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, like you said, they're about to be 10-2, with the two losses being to Kansas on a neutral, Purdue on a neutral. They got blown out by Purdue, but they were competitive with KU. They've got three top 30 KenPom wins, Xavier, Ohio State, and Iowa. That's nothing to scoff at. And so if you're John Shire, I do think you got to feel pretty good that you are about to be 10-3 through your first 12, and you've really, back to the freshman for a second, gotten nothing from the guy who was supposed to be your best recruit, best incoming freshman, and that's Derek Lively, who was more or less non-existent again last night. Filipowski's been good. Mitchell's been good. Lively just, for whatever reason, the adjustment is a little slower. Perhaps it has something to do with, you know, preseason, you know, injury and you know, missing time, but he was limited last night. He only played 13 minutes. He got 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 3 fouls. And so I'm not going to turn this into every game we talk about what's wrong with Derek Lively, but it is just noticeable. The truth is you don't see prospects rated where he was rated in his high school class often struggle to this degree, into the month of December or at all.
I would agree. And let's look up in mid-January and see if that's still the case. And maybe it will be. Filipowski's been reliable enough, and the team collectively defensively has been good enough where it just, Duke fans are aware of this. If you're a diehard of the sport, you're aware of this. He will, like, if this team is going to be like an ACC contender, if it's going to be a 1 or a 2 seed, if it wants to be a Final Four team, like, he will have to really show up and be that kind of player. They just haven't needed it yet because overall they've got good length on the perimeter. Like even stuff like Ryan Young, who just, you know, comes from Northwestern. He's smart, old, always plays hard. Like, he's just a guy that staff does not have to worry about not doing all the stuff they're asking him to do. And so because of that, it's filling some voids that otherwise wouldn't be able to be filled. And that's why it's not really reason for much concern for Duke yet. And hell, I mean, the ACC right now is it's not an inspiring league. It is sixth in KenPom. The ACC right now is below the Pac-12 to this point. So maybe with the exception of 3 or 4 games on the league schedule for Duke, I know that team won't look at it that way. That staff won't look at it that way, but we're looking at this from a removed vantage point. There actually will not be an overwhelming amount of games where Duke might need to have Lively and Whitehead step up and be star level players. I think you're going to need it eventually. I think you'll need it, particularly in March. But to this point, you know what? You're fine. And you set up as the number 2 team in the league as of right now. I know Virginia got a push on Tuesday night from the Dukes of James Madison, but Virginia has been the best team. And then it's Duke. And then we can get into the conversation of yes, the likes of Virginia Tech, Miami, Carolina gets its act together. Those are really going to be the teams that are vying for the third spot. But I don't see why the league is going to have more than five bids at this point. Not unthinkable that it could get more, but it's six overall in ranking in the league hierarchy. And if you're Duke, you are certainly satisfied with the performance to this point of your team. And a lot of that's because of Roach, who has been very steady, very reliable, and has embraced now as a junior being a vocal leader for that team.
On the ACC, you know, we've talked about this before. It's not hard to figure out why the league is struggling. Louisville is one of the great basketball programs in the country. It stinks. Florida State is 1-9. That's been a consistently good program under Leonard Hamilton. They're not good this season. You know, Syracuse is a big brand led by a Hall of Fame coach that's won a national championship in my adult life. They're not good. I don't care what league you are, when a handful of programs that have been traditionally strong all get bad at the same time, then it's going to be hard for your league to flourish in the ways that it previously had. So Virginia looks super strong, even though it wasn't a tight, low-scoring game on Tuesday night with an inferior opponent. Duke, I think, is going to be fine. Miami and Virginia Tech both off to 8-1 starts. North Carolina, I'm just going to trust. They're eventually going to be maybe not, you know, the best team in the country like the preseason AP poll suggested they should be, but they're going to be fine eventually. I think. But when you've got big brands like Syracuse, Louisville, you know, let's just stop there. Syracuse and Louisville, being not just, irrelevant, but like embarrassingly bad, relative to the standard that has been set at those programs, then that's a problem for the ACC. And that's at least one of the reasons you see in that league struggle in the computers. One more notable result from Tuesday night, and there was really nothing on Monday, although like we suggested could be possible on Sunday's podcast, Gonzaga was in a game with Kent State. I mean, they were behind. There was a point where it was like, they might lose.
And they were down four with like 3.5 minutes to go. Yeah, it was right. It was a push. Yeah.
I was watching on Root.
Yeah, you were.
I had Root on my TV. So Timmy was great. I think he had 29 points and, you know, the obviously biggest difference in that game, but whatever. Tuesday, there was one more notable result. It's Maryland took its first loss of the season at Wisconsin. The final score was Wisconsin 64, Maryland 59. So the Badgers have now won back-to-back games over Marquette and Maryland, 7-2. The losses are to Kansas and Wake Forest. If not for the Wake Forest loss at home, I'd be ranking Wisconsin right now. As it is, Wisconsin is just on the outside of the top 25 and one. We both had Wisconsin, I looked this up this morning, ninth in the Big Ten preseason projections. Were we too low, or is it too early to tell? I think it's probably too early to tell.
No, I was too low. Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin will make the NCAA tournament. I did not have that going into the season. And, you know, after Johnny Davis played the way he did a season ago and coming in, and it was like, okay, what are they going to get from, you know, how big of a jump will Chucky Hepburn make in the second season? Tyler Wall, you know, a solid player. He should be good, but what will they have here? And right now, I mean, they have Hepburn shooting 48% from three. They've got a really good defense. It's coming along on offense. Remember, this team almost knocked off Kansas in the Bahamas as well. So yes, a very nice, and I didn't see any of the game, obviously. I was at the Garden, so I can't speak to literally anything with how Wisconsin or Maryland played in this one. But to be able to go into Marquette, get that win on the road in a bonus session, come back, knock Maryland from the ranks of the unbeatens there. Certainly a nice start for Greg Gard's program. And yeah, I mean, I don't know where they'll end up in the Big Ten hierarchy, but to me, Wisconsin anywhere from 3-9 seems possible. And given the strength of the Big Ten this season, like 9 could still be good enough to get you into the tournament.
I was considering if I really wanted to lean into Illinois villain.
Yeah.
Dropping the Illini this morning in the top 25-1 and rationalize it by saying, listen, your loss at Maryland now looks like a bad loss. Your resume has been has been downgraded because of what happened between Maryland and Wisconsin on Tuesday night. And so congrats on your victory over Texas, but the resume is now banged up a little more than it. That's no longer a loss to undefeated Maryland. That's a loss to one loss Maryland that just got not handled easily, but got handled by a Wisconsin team that had lost in that same building to Wake Forest. And then I said, nope, I don't need that in my life. I'm going to drive the Illinois train. Choo-choo! Choo-choo! So I moved Illinois up, dropped Maryland down. And so the Terrapins are now 13th in the top 25 and one. They had 14 turnovers against Wisconsin, just 9 assists. So you were at the Garden, you didn't see it. They did not play well, but some of that was Wisconsin. Remember, Wisconsin goes to Marquette. That's the same Marquette that had just blown out Baylor. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin goes there and wins. So, you know, Greg Gard, I don't know where this is going, but they put together back-to-back, like, truly impressive performances that got some wins that I think, you know, if and I think this was true in the preseason, Wisconsin looked like a, you know, a bubble team, maybe on the outside of most projected brackets. And if that's what your preseason expectations were, not internally, but externally, then, you know, that's two wins they've got. It's December 7th. They've already got two wins that are probably going to, you know, hold up pretty well through Selection Sunday. So if they're actually a bubble team, what they've done over the past week is going to be wildly beneficial by the time we start trying to fill up a 68-team bracket. Looking ahead, nothing too great the next two nights. I'm going to be in studio on Wednesday night, Villanova Penn, CBS Sports Network. That starts at 7 o'clock Eastern. Also on Wednesday night, UConn at Florida. Undefeated Huskies, your home state Huskies, mm-hmm. going to the O-Dome. You know how difficult that has been historically. What you going to be monitoring over the next two nights before we talk again on Friday morning?
All right. Well, one quick note from Tuesday. I will note that Iona pasted St. Louis, 84-62. The A-10 doesn't have a KenPom top 50 team. The league's in a tough spot right now. Dayton's not what it was supposed to be. VCU has 3 losses already. So just something that we'll circle back to this throughout the season.
I mean, listen, I'm not trying to connect these things.
Oh, boy. Okay. I know.
But when I was the master of ceremonies, A-10 Media Day pre-pandemic,
yeah,
this kind of stuff wasn't happening.
All right. Well, I mean, that's not exactly. When did you start being the master of ceremonies? What year do you think that was?
I feel like it was probably something like 2018 or 19.
All right. So in 2018, the A-10 had 3 bids. In 19, it had 2. In 2020, it was on pace for 2. In 21, it had 2. In 22, it had 2. Theory debunked. So
no, I'm going to have to disagree with you.
Regardless, I didn't want to. Great win for Iona Riccitino. Man, oh man, that's tough for St. Louis. You couldn't even keep it competitive. 84 again. I didn't say 84-82 or 64-62. Iona beat St. Louis 84-62. Iona is now up to 65 in KenPom. St. Louis is 53. So, As for Florida UConn on Wednesday night, yeah, that's a big spot for the Gators. They went 1-2 at PK 85. They beat Oregon State convincingly, but lost a competitive game to Xavier. Got ramshackled against West Virginia, 84-55. Also have a home loss against Florida Atlantic there. So this is the second to last non-conference opportunity. Well, that's technically a lie. They've got UConn, Oklahoma, and then at the end of January, they're going to go to Kansas State. So they still have more outside of SEC playing. The SEC schedule is obviously going to be a bear, but let's see how Florida shows up in this one. If I will say this, I'm in on UConn, like a convincing team. They have just played so tremendously at this point. If UConn goes into Florida tonight and hands down, you know, a 15-point, 18-point, 20-point defeat, which I'm not predicting it to be that drastic, but if that happens, like, It's time to start talking about the Huskies as legitimate national championship contenders. To this point, you could even UConn fans are already there, but this is their first road game of the season, so I'll be watching it with an interested eye. It's not a great slate GP, But I will also note two other games on Wednesday night. Michigan State plays at Penn State, and that's a game that Michigan State could lose. I'm going to say Michigan State's not favored in that game. Let me bring that up real quick on the site. I would think that given the way that they've played, they're shorthanded. Penn State's been improved. I would bet you that Michigan State is a dog in this
Penn
game.
State minus 3.5 points.
Yeah, exactly. So a Michigan State loss would drop them to 5-5. And yeah, like that would be fairly urgent situation in East Lansing with that. So just keep an eye on that. And then, Dayton plays at Virginia Tech. That goes back to my 8-10 point. Yeah, preseason darling. They have injury issues, but probably going to lose at Virginia Tech and be a 5-5 team. But UConn of Florida is by far the biggest game of Wednesday. And then Thursday, just two to watch. Rutgers is at Ohio State. I think that's a quality game. And then Iowa has to turn around 2 days after playing Duke and play, you know, the huge rivalry game. Iowa State's going to Iowa. This is actually a big three-game stretch for the Hawkeyes. They have Duke Tuesday, they lose. Iowa State and the Cy-Hawk on Thursday. And then they play Wisconsin this weekend there. So certainly among the toughest, if not the toughest, you know, 5-6 days runs on the Iowa schedule there. That is the best game of Thursday night.
I appreciate you correcting your lies as you've labeled it. But just so you know, going forward,
what?
We're not going to do that.
What lie did I correct?
You said something about this will wrap up somebody's non-league schedule, and you said that's not technically true. That's a lie. And then you corrected yourself, which I can appreciate. That's the old way to do it. New way to do it. We're just going to start lying. I embrace lying now. Okay. Let's just lie about stuff.
Okay, so turn this podcast into a morally decrepit vessel. Another such thing in the world, because we don't have enough of that.
Yeah. We're not going to lie about serious things. Okay. We're going to lie about things that we might have had wrong as it pertains to college basketball teams. So like when somebody says,
I can't,
you're a hater. You had Illinois sixth in the Big Ten preseason projections. I'm going to say that's not true. I had Illinois projected to win the Big Ten.
Okay.
The entire time.
These things are archived. Okay. I'm just easily.
I know, but we live in a country now where it doesn't matter if people can prove you're lying. You just have to keep saying this, you know, over and over again. And there's at least like 20% of the country will believe you. And that's all I need.
Eric in the chat goes, gaslight the fans. I love it. I refuse. I will. Maybe every so often. I can't endorse this behavior.
You don't have to tell the truth anymore. That's what I've learned living in America. It's not important anymore. If we're not going to hold anybody else to a standard of truth, I don't know why we should hold
this
ourselves.
This is the man you want driving your train. In fact, it's not. No one wants you driving the, no one wants you driving the damn train. Okay?
I'm driving the Illinois train.
Yeah.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Huck. Thank you guys once again for listening.
Oh, I got a question for you.
Hold okay, on. Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I got two. I met a nice gentleman, Texas fan, huge, huge fan. Met him at the game on Tuesday night. He wanted an update. I remember you talking about it, but I couldn't remember what he said. That like 6 months ago, you said your boys were throwing baseballs around the house and knocking holes in the sheetrock and all that. He wanted an update if you have fixed your house.
Well, of course.
It's been like a lingering mystery with him that's just been hovering over him for months and months. I said I'd ask you.
Yeah, no, one of my close friends is a contractor. So, we had that fixed like literally the next day.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not the type who can just have holes in my walls and be okay with it. Like that kind of stuff drives me crazy. Anything that doesn't look the way it's supposed to look drives me insane. I got that fixed immediately. It's a real shame when you have to spend hard earned money fixing things that like should not be destroyed. But when you have little guys, and maybe your little guys are better than mine, but like we are constantly having to spend money to just either fix something that has been broken or, replace something that has been lost or, you know, and now we've got a new dog and he likes to, you know, anything he can fit in his mouth, he will chew on it. So like a Nintendo Switch controller, AirPods, glasses. All of these things have been destroyed in my home in the past 6 months by our little Frenchie Luca. He's sweet, but boy, he'll chew your stuff up.
Yeah, that's right.
He will chew your stuff up so much that on is it Black Friday? Is that when all the deals are?
Come on, man. Yes.
Okay. I get Good Friday and Black Friday confused. I get Black Friday and Good Friday confused. I don't know which one is about Jesus and which one's about getting great deals. I get them mixed up all the time. So Black Friday, this is how at risk AirPods are at my home because of this dog. I literally bought a new pair of AirPods just because they were on sale, and I just put them in a drawer. I just have them. They're like my backup AirPods now.
You're going to lose them.
They're in a drawer. Nobody can
take them. You're done.
This is a hard life, you know?
Wait, GP, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What number of AirPods is this? Because last I checked, it was like 8 or 9.
It's up there. But I got, let me show you what I got. This is great.
Okay. While GP is doing that, yeah, there we go. Okay.
So I got right, this. Here,
oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I had the normal
your
case.
Back on my buddy. He can't hear me.
Your yep. AirPod.
There we go.
I had the normal case that went over, but as I would walk through airports and stuff, they would still fall out. I still lost a pair. And so now, look at this. I got one with a little latch on it, a little button on there. You see that little button? So now you can button them up. Button up AirPods. So I'm less likely to lose them in an airport or Uber or just walking through the streets. But my dog will still chew on them if he has access to them. So I just got a backup. I just got a backup pair. I felt like that was planning ahead. I felt like that's pretty smart of me.
Fair enough. One more shout as we get out the door. I've shouted out this fine gentleman on a previous pod when I learned he listens to every episode. But I had a nice quick conversation with him before the tip last night. And, you know, Dan Shulman is a just extremely good broadcaster, so well regarded in the industry, does a great job. And sometimes when you get to talking about your encounters in Vegas elevators and stuff, I think, man, there are people like Shulman listen to this thing. And and like, what are we doing here? But I got to catch up with him, and he says hello, and he very much enjoys the podcast. And he's like, I will give you the name of a therapist for having to do that with Parrish. So Shulman is terrific, and I wanted to give him a shout because he does a great job there. And it's in all sincerity, like when we do this pod, I don't know, in real time, I never think about like who it's going out to the world and who's listening to it. But there are like conference commissioners and athletic directors, oh, yeah. Like people like really good positions that listen to this podcast, like accomplished, competent, mostly serious people. And to think that they're listening to this sometimes is just outrageous.
No, but I'm exactly the same way in the sense that I don't think about who's listening.
But
sometimes we'll get, and my radio show's the same way, like we'll get into these ridiculous, like totally ridiculous conversations. And we had the other night, I finished radio and then I went to meet my family at we were doing a gingerbread house making thing. You know, it's like a go to this place and you make gingerbread houses. It's a, you know, family event. And so we went to that, and I walk in, and with the first person I see is this nice woman, and she goes, are you, you know, and I said, yes, I am. And she said, oh, it was a fun show today. And I'm like, what were we just talking about? And like, what we were talking about is Candlebox, the band.
Yeah.
And dude, I got on, I accidentally
reach you, baby.
Candlebox had some hits. Candlebox had some hits. So we're talking about Candlebox. And then you ever go to those stores where it's like they say, and your total is 2132. Would you like to round up for cancer research? So how do you handle that situation?
How do I?
Yeah.
Every time.
Almost
every time. Yeah.
Every time round up. Like the most it can cost
you. If it's a cancer research, I'm doing it every single time. If it's something else and whatever, I'm honestly probably like 90% of the time. Yeah,
now, I'm 100% of the time. It's like a dog
again,
rescue.
Nice to the audience. Well done. Okay.
Dog rescue. 100% of the time. Like whatever you need me to round up. Whatever you need me to round up for, I'll round up for. But then somebody told me, and I have no idea this is true. I haven't taken the time to. Somebody told me what these companies do.
Somebody needs to look into this and get back to me on this. Somebody said what these companies do is they round up all of these, you know, figures, and they take this money and then they donate it under their name and they get a tax break on it. And I said, is that, that sounds like funny business. Yeah. And so then I started wondering, if we're going to get to a point where everybody is asking you to round up, isn't it reasonable to every once in a while ask them if they want to round down?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, and your total is $21.74. And then before they can say anything, you step in, interrupt, and go, would you like to round down?
Yeah.
And they'll be like, what?
Yeah.
And you said, and they say, you're about to ask me if I want to round up. Why can't I ask you if you want to round down? That feels like a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It should, though.
Episode.
Once out of every five times.
So anyway, that's what this woman, and I had this moment where I was like, this is like a real person, and she's listening to me go on and on about getting Hollywood feed to round down every once in a while for dog rescue.
Yeah.
Tom Hart, another great play-by-play man, he texted me and said that
the podcast listener.
He was listening to the previous episode on a plane and like literally spit his water out when I told that prostitute story. You never know what you're gonna get, you know.
Just a reminder. Yeah, we do. I know we have it might be a small portion, but there is, you know, we got some preteens, middle schoolers listening to the pod. So I'm just, not that they're not encountering this occasionally every so often, but yes, I.
Well, they got to hear these things from somebody. You know?
Why not you? Right?
Why not me? Why not Uncle Gary? I'd rather them hear it from me than somebody else. I'd rather hear rather them hear it from me than somebody with two full eyebrows.
Okay.
I still only have one eyebrow. It's not great, Norlander. It's not great. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars, nice reviews. There's more of us than there are of them. Don't let them tell you otherwise. We're going to talk to you again on Friday. Till then, just do the best you can. That's all anybody's asking. Bye-bye.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.